Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. As you could tell, Monday came and gone, and I didn't necessarily give you my two cents regarding, are we too thin-skinned or are we too insensitive? So I'm going to give you that, but we got a lot of stuff we want to cover. And what I want to do, because before I get rudely interrupted again, I'm going to dive into the importance of the language of the Constitution and that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That Congress cannot change what the Constitution means, even if they have an enumerated power within that. They cannot modify or expand that enumerated power. The only way they can do that is through amending the Constitution. And so I'm going to give you two very specific cases where you will find that Congress and the states all agreed that the Constitution had to be modified for those minute changes that they were going to make. And so, and this is in context for a couple of reasons, because one, we have to be very clear on the understanding of treason and the power of the states to be able to charge treason. And secondly, we also have to understand the precise process of choosing the president in the United States. The president is not our king. He is only an executive that is chosen to fulfill the laws of our Congress. For some reason and somehow, it has become the almighty where you must kiss their ring. They don't have that power. They don't. They have the power to lead, and they have the power to be. And when I say lead, Trump could have easily gone out and led this nation by going out to every single state and sat in front of every single legislative body and admonished them and demanded that they do their job in saving their citizens from federal tyranny. But he never did, because he kind of liked being king, and he liked the idea that, you know, even though maybe he's really not a king, you know, for 4 years, he sure felt that way. Maybe. Anyway, as you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And so I hope you saw the show today on Rumble. We connected, and we dove into the framework of what it takes to create a constitutional county. Now, I've had this conversation just recently with the Constitution Party. I think we need to have this conversation with the Independent American Party. What I'm trying to do is I want to get as many people invigorated, because if I can create, let's just call it, a competitive environment, then America wins. Because if we've got lots of entities, parties, and so forth that are out there pursuing what to do and how to do the right thing, then I think America wins, right? Anyway, so are we too thin-skinned or are we too insensitive? For years and years, as we look at the old world look of a man, the man with testosterone and the man that didn't take crap, the man that would defend his honor and challenge you to a duel. There was a time of civility within that, you know, that masculine era. And so that goes back to the days of framing, when there was that level of civility and that level of honor and that that seriousness. I mean, were they too thin-skinned to actually say, you know, I'm willing to fight you to the death? Well, I don't think that was necessarily too thin-skinned, because I believe that almost everybody, regardless of what era they grow up in or they live in, when you become an adult over time, you start appreciating life, and you don't necessarily throw caution to the wind and say, you know, today's a good day to die. You may know some warriors that may have that mentality because they're warriors, but that's not the common thing, especially when it comes to your honor. And so when you believe that your honor is being impugned, then back in those days, you had that right. So were they too thin-skinned, or were they just literally protecting their honor? Because back in those days, your honor meant more to you than your life itself, because you couldn't do anything in town if you lost your honor. I mean, you couldn't get business. I mean, you become the laughingstock. If you're called out on a lie, if you're called out on things and it actually starts, you know, getting out, nobody wanted that. As a matter of fact, it was the only way you can defend your position and again, your position and place in your community. But let's look at today. Over the past, I'm going to say since the 70s, the misandrist movement, those who hate men, have actually really been able to do a great marketing on calling people chauvinist pigs. And just look at Archie Bunker. That was the first classic of a man. And actually, you can go back to the Honeymooners, where I forget the big guy's name. Anyway, I'm bad with names. That's okay. You don't have to pitch it to me. You know who the Honeymooners are. And there was Ralph Cramden. And Ralph, and I forget, all the names. But anyway, the big guy was, you know, out there, and he was always stepping on it just because he, you know, was insensitive and was kind of like a, you know, they cast him as not necessarily a great role model. However, they always, you know, gave him the space to where he could apologize, make up, and so forth, where Archie Bunker was different. He was stubborn, and they cast him as a real pig, a real chauvinist pig. You know, if you understand, I think the guy's real name was Carroll. If you go look at his views politically and so forth, this guy was a liberal big time, and he loved playing this because he knew what he was doing. He was a part of an effort in starting to mold and manipulate the American society to actually look at a disfavorable look at a man that would sit and make a judgment on, let's just say, either stereotypes, because you got to remember, stereotypes, whether we like it or not, they're based on something, right? And it's not necessarily based on thin air. But the fact of the matter is that old codgers usually have a little bit of wisdom because they've grown up through things. Now, Archie Bunker may have been uneducated, but they deliberately gave him these types of scenarios and positions to make him look bad. Archie Bunker was not a real person. And so as we look, and I want to impress this upon you, when you look at the TV shows of the late 60s and the early 70s, it seemed like the focus of America was racism. And overcoming that pigheadedness. And there was a black chauvinist pig who was George Jefferson. And they spawned out of the Archie Bunker show. And they were the first show, if I remember correctly, they were the first show on television to actually have an interracial marriage. And as things started to progress, they realized that they were actually having a positive effect on race relations in America. And so they instantly stopped all of that, and they basically started segregating. Excuse me. They started segregating television shows. In other words, it was either about black, it was either about white, and it was either about the tension between the two. And in other words, instead of continuing to try to help bridge and help, you know, create a unity between the races, they started stoking it up. And actually, while they were doing that, you could tell that their real position was homosexuality and promoting and downplaying and getting everybody to basically, because Three's Company and a lot of the TV shows that were in the late 70s, mid to late 70s, they started in introducing either characters or situations where, you know, because the bullying, a homosexual killed himself or something like that. And when you looked at Three's Company, Three's Company was a sitcom, and it was all based on, you know, misunderstandings, but the whole sitcom was based on a heterosexual that lied to the landowner to say he was homosexual so that he could live with these two girls in the same house, because back in those days they just wouldn't let that happen. Oh, well, because you're homosexual, you allowed that to happen. So anyway, this was the turning of the tide and the manipulation. And so I'm going to finish my thought on this when we come back, because I want you to see that this is a long time coming. We'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so actually, like I was saying, the interracial marriages started really increasing, getting along in the 70s and 80s. It was like, oh no, they were too successful maybe. Because you have to understand, as long as they can divide and conquer, they can control us. And so the homosexual movement really became the forefront of the progressive left. And if you go back and look at the 45 goals that W. Cleon Skousen identified in The Naked Communist, and I want to say 1956-57 in his book The Naked Communist, and actually this became a part of the congressional record. So I included that in my book, those 45 goals, and homosexuality and the deterioration of the family was one of the key things that was a part of those goals. And so because homosexuality is, it breaks the doors and windows wide open to start redefining the family. And we can see how everything kind of played out. Because as we started getting into the 80s, it was almost like there were still shows that would still actually have bad connotations, or they were not pandering to GLAAD. And as a matter of fact, GLAAD would call them out and say, you're hateful, you're bad people. And so GLAAD used to actually start throwing a lot of money around. And and I don't know if it was necessarily GLAAD. If you really look, there was a Hollywood like film credits organization that was really promoting, and they would constantly rate who was the most favorable. And all of a sudden, over time, it became, well, who was going to become the most favorable that year, so that they could get all the money and those types of things that were associated with that, because this became a part of big business. And so as we started looking, and if anybody ever watched Seinfeld, there was that one episode, because they actually went to Seinfeld and said, hey, you're not promoting or, doing anything. And some of your references or subtext kind of speaks poorly upon homosexuality. And so he had that one episode about where, somebody misunderstood Jerry and George, that they were lovers, and they kept on trying to clarify, no, we're not. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And so he even placated them. And so it became more and more prevalent. And today, we have turned this corner to where now we have these people and organizations in every state that are violating the law. And when I say violating the law, because when you look at our education system, and this is we've talked about this. This is one of those things you need to petition on. When they start putting sexually graphic material in the hands of children that should not even be seeing these types of things, it's illegal in every state to expose a child to pornography. But it's okay if the school does it. My friends, it would be before it's too late, we better start reacting. And everybody, a part of the Planned Parenthood that actually put these things into the curriculum, those people who distributed it, those people, the school boards and the teachers who said, okay, the lawmakers, all of these people, they need to go to jail. And I just say that because what they have done is they have completely undermined our society. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. And I'm telling you, it's been a long time coming. And I can tell you, a long time ago, my wife and I had, actually, I think it was 2015. And I said it was going to take about 10 years. But within 10 years, we would see children in grade school being assigned different types of tasks of having sex acts with animals, with other, opposite sex, all of these different forms of acts, so that the child could then identify what they enjoyed the most, so that they could be labeled and guarded from their parents and from society, from being able to manipulate them and reprogram them otherwise. Do you understand what I just said? And my wife said, well, she thinks it was, 5 years. She thought we were 5 years away. I think she was more correct. I think she was closer to the real number, because what we're seeing in this material is basically almost the same thing. It's almost hoodwinking them to say, well, look at all these things you could do, you can try, and you need to figure out for yourself. Friends, as we start looking and as we start understanding that even though in the subtext of entertainment, the media and everything else, we've been bombarded with this messaging, in addition to that, I have to throw this in, that over time, I have watched men actually become softened, and I have more, I blame it more on their diet and what they're doing, because bottom line, when we started injecting soy milk and soy and those types of products that raise your estrogen level, then we have really found the culprit behind this. And so I've actually seen guys go from wearing, you know, and acting and being what I would just say is just a regular man. And all of a sudden, they start wearing metrosexual types of clothes. And what is that? It's like gender neutral stuff. And they become a metrosexual. And I'm going, what the heck happened? And I honestly believe, you know, because some of these guys were just, they started changing their diet. Their wives had them start eating soy and so forth. And you could actually start seeing it. It didn't happen overnight, but over time, all of a sudden you go, hey, what the heck just happened here? And that's how it was, that it was a flash for me that way. So are we too thin-skinned or are we too insensitive? I don't think we're insensitive. I think we've become too thin-skinned. We've continually placated the left. We've continually placated the soft. And because, oh, bullying is bad. I'm not saying that bullying is good, but we've gone so far to where, oh, you're being a bully. Well, you know, life's tough. And if you can't take ridicule and if you can't raise your children to be stronger, you know, emotionally and mentally stronger, then sticks and stones might break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And as much as I, as a child, had heard that and understood that, I still had my feelings hurt because I'm a human being. I had myself to actually, you know, I actually had to get myself to go, they're just words. It's only, you know, rhetoric. It is only, you know, just taunting. It's nothing. And in some cases, I went and defended myself. And we went fist to cuff. Bottom line, my friends, it's not that we've become insensitive. It is because people have become too thin-skinned, and we have placated that, and oh well, you know, you've insulted me, I've been offended. We get too easily offended. Go read Matthew 24. There are way too many people that are getting offended. We should be able to criticize each other openly as long as we do it objectively and honestly. You don't have to be mean about it, but I do believe that there are people that just like to be mean. You know, everybody's got that neighbor that's just mean. And so anyway, let me get through these obligatories because I want to get into the Constitution. Financial fortitude are these endorsements, I should say. These are not obligated endorsements. I'm not being paid. I just want to make sure I do this. Financial fortitude or fortitude financial coaching with Gary Smith. You've got to check him out if you're ready to actually start making changes. And as a matter of fact, New Year's is coming up. You may want to actually start considering, are you ready for 2022 to make that real change in your life to actually start, you know, living like no one else? I think that's the Dave Ramsey, you know, statement. You know, you got to learn to live like no one else because eventually you can live like no one else. Free Constitution classes at constitutioneducation.us. I got a chance to hear Keith Borders. We didn't get a chance to talk. I hope to talk to him soon. And Timber Nation. Timber, I'm telling you, you got to check him out. We've actually had callers going, hey, you know, GR has recommended you, and your stuff looks great. And so they're getting very busy. They need to start expanding and they need to, you know, start really getting their processes and so forth so that they can expand. But anyway, anywho, check them out. I know that at this point in time, everything that they're doing is just top notch. You're going to love it. RadioDustCovers.com if you need to protect your hardware. Now for Thanksgiving tomorrow, which is Wednesday, I'm going to be airing the Thanksgiving message and we'll re-air that on Thursday. And then on Friday, what we're going to have is we're going to have kind of some news and media marketing stuff. We're going to do the marketing line. That way you can, you know, once again, realize if you, like me, no longer go through the news feeds and no longer, you know, care about what the heck's going on because everybody's talking about the Rittenhouse trial and all these other things. Well, we're talking about the Constitution. We're learning what we need to do, and we're learning how to do it. So anyway, when we come back, we're going to get into the 11th Amendment. We're going to get into the 12th Amendment, and then we're going to get into treason and how we have changed, you know, what can be done and how it can be done, just on treason, something within the Constitution. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's dive into the 11th Amendment first. Let me see. I know I've got it here somewhere. And I believe this is it. Yes, this is Article 3. So this is what the Constitution says. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. The laws of the United States and treaties made, or which shall be made, under their authority to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state and citizen of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same, claiming lands under grants of different states, and between a state or the citizen thereof and foreign states and or citizen subjects. And so when you kind of look at the 11th Amendment, you go, well, now, the 11th Amendment, which is really pointing at Article 3. And so when you really look at that and you go, okay, so that was, you know, it seems like it was really wide open. And as a matter of fact, the federal government started getting its nose into the state's knickers. And so what they did was the states demanded the 11th Amendment. And this is what the 11th Amendment said. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state or by citizens of subjects of any foreign state. So, in other words, they really clarified subsection 1 of section 2 of article 3. And so they really shortened that. And even though there are some things that, you know, are still a part of this, like they will still have all cases affecting ambassadors and public ministers and consuls, because those are representatives of the United States abroad. And so the state said, you're not going to get your nose in our knickers because you don't have any jurisdiction. Just because these are suits, it cannot be construed that your power extends to any suit in law or equity, period. And so the 11th Amendment really drew that line, and it kind of simplified and it changed the language of what they had jurisdiction over. Now, the 12th Amendment, what I have is I've kind of broken it down because the 12th Amendment affects Article 2, Section 1. And it's actually, if I remember correctly, it's Section 1, Subsection 2. Let me go back to the Constitution just to confirm that, yes, so it is Section 1, Subsection 2, because Section 1, the executive power extends to the President of the United States, that basic line. Anyway, now listen to what changes between the original Article 2 and the 12th Amendment. Now, the 12th Amendment includes a simplification that the Electoral College is not the only body that has the authority to choose the president. In other words, if they can't come up with a clear majority quickly, and I think they only got one or two votes in it, and then if not, then it goes to the House of Representatives and the Senate, and they choose as the representatives of the people and of the states. Now, in the Electoral College, the importance of the Senate and representation of the Senate has been completely destroyed by the 17th Amendment. And so what should probably happen is what they should have done, because we no longer have state legislatures choosing the senators. It should really go to the state legislators to then choose. They would all vote on a majority by each house, and it would simplify that and actually give us the true perspective of the states and the people, how they voted for the president and vice president. So, in other words, there would be 50 votes for president. And that the president pro tem would be the deciding vote, and it's this, in the 12th Amendment, each senator gets one vote, but the senators are no longer representing the states, because of the 17th Amendment, I truly believe that they had lost the essence of the Electoral College. The 17th Amendment screwed that up. Anywho, this is exactly what Article 2 says. The electors shall meet in the respective states and vote by ballot for two persons. Now I'm going to read the first clause here. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president. So instead of voting for two persons, they vote for a president and they vote for a vice president, and they do that on, I believe, two ballots, one of whom at least shall not be, this is Article 2, of whom one at least shall not be the inhabitant of the same state with themselves. This is the ending part of that sentence for the 12th Amendment. One of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves, and then that's a semicolon there. Now, going to Article 2, the next sentence says, and they shall make a list of all persons voted for, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States. So, after the semicolon, they shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president and in distinct ballots the person voted for as vice president. So, the real change here is instead of voting for two people, because the outcome was the person that didn't get president would become vice president. Now the Electoral College distinctively chooses president and vice president. So that's your takeaway. That's what you should be getting. And the number of votes for each which they shall list shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the president of the Senate. And so Article 2 basically says to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the president of the Senate. And then it get in Article 2, the next step is the president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all certificates and the votes shall be counted. Now, in this particular case, in the 12th Amendment, it says the president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all the certificates and the votes shall be counted. So no change there. Now, in the 12th Amendment, the next sentence says, the person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. And what they say here, the person having the greatest number of votes shall be president. So basically, it comes down to that. If such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, so there's that little clause there, and if you go down and they say the exact same thing. let me see here. This is hard to follow. If such a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have such majority, this is the 12th Amendment, if no person have such a majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. So in other words, they only got one shot in the 12th Amendment, and the House will then basically take the top three, if that's how many there are, that are, you know, in the lead, or how many people were voted for, but no more than three. And so as we look at the Article 2, the person having the greatest number of votes shall be president if such majority of the electors appointed, and if there be more than one who have such majority and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for president. And if no, so they didn't make much of a change other than the fact that the Electoral College voted for president and vice president separately. I just want to point this out. I mean, there's lots of words here, and it seems kind of confusing for many people, but really, that's a minute change. And they amended the Constitution to clearly construe that the federal government cannot just construe that they have a jurisdiction over all cases, between all things. And so they base under the that arise under the Constitution. And so they pushed back on the judiciary and made, you know, and they tweaked Article 3. And with the 12th Amendment, they made a significant change. Well, it's a minute change technically, but I mean, there's lots of words to it. And the bottom line is that the Electoral College is supposed to vote separately for who they choose as president and who they choose as vice president. In other words, there's no such thing that's allocating tickets in the Constitution. The parties have dictated this, and the parties have bamboozled and convinced your state legislators that they are best in choosing your electors, where clearly it states right here that the state legislators, let me go to the very top, because this is the part that never changed. The 12th Amendment did not change this. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the state legislators may direct a number of equal electors. In other words, they have the manner of choosing, but they cannot choose the outcome. We're going to get back into this when we come right back. Then we're going to get into treason. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we were going into break, I was clearly reading the very front end of how we're to choose our electors. So just to be clear, we the people are to choose our electors. However, the state legislatures are to choose the manner of how we can choose them. Now, they have a wide open opportunity when you look at what they can do, because they're allocated an elector for each senator, so that's two, that the state gets two. And in the old days, the state legislators would actually choose the two electors for the state legislature, because that was their vote for president. And then the people, based on the congressional district, they would choose both in the presidential election, they would choose both their representative and their elector. Now, I am hoping and praying that Keith Broders has got his Skype working so that we can actually dive into the details, because if there's anybody that has taken the time in doing the research on how the first presidential election, the second presidential, each of these, and how over time they started morphing and going down these different paths of choosing their electors. I want you to understand that when we start looking at how the president is supposed to be chosen and how we're currently doing it today, it does not. They're nothing the way they're supposed to be. In other words, these two are diametrically opposed, because we're not to have a direct election for our executives. So the point is, is that we really want to actually start getting people to understand a Republican form of government, and more importantly, what these constitutional processes are. And it is our goal to start getting these Republican-controlled states to actually, you know, get their states back towards the true electoral college, to start thumbing their nose at these other states that say, hey, you know, you can't have a popular vote. You cannot not change the Constitution. You have to go by the Constitution being the supreme law of the land. And so this brings up this bigger issue. inside the Constitution, there is this thing that we call the, let's just say, treason, okay? And so when treason is delegated in the Constitution as to who has jurisdiction over what treason, it is very clear that the federal government, when they charge somebody with treason against the United States, then that they have jurisdiction. However, a state has the authority to actually charge somebody with treason. So let me read this. This is Article 4, Section 2, Subsection 2. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime, who shall flee justice or be found in another state, and be found in another state, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed from the state having jurisdiction of the crime. And so, can the states charge somebody with treason? Well, every once in a while, I get these, you know, I won't be derogatory. Every once in a while, I get these wonks that think that, oh, well, we've redefined treason so that we have to, you know, I mean, they've literally gone down this path of, oh, well, we have to be under war. The people that they're supporting actually has to be a declared enemy. And I'm going, so show me that in the Constitution. Oh, well, they've defined it. And I go, well, they can't define it that way. It's clearly defined in the Constitution as what is defined as treason. And so an enemy does not have to be somebody that we go to war with. And they say, oh, well, yes, it is. Oh, absolutely. And I go, okay, so then you're telling me that the first 24 people charged with treason in the United States should never have been charged by the framers who said they committed treason. And then all of a sudden their jaws drop. What? And I say, well, the Whiskey Rebellion, there were 24 men charged with treason. You're telling me that the framers didn't understand the charge treason because they didn't define it that well? Well, we have precedence. In other words, if you understand that they've done this, that sets precedence. Who were these people and what were they doing? They were protesting a tax. So the term treason sure extends a lot further because were they really, so the question is, do you have to commit insurrection or just rebel? And what is the rebellion? What is the case of the rebellion? Is it trying to kill people? Is it trying to, you know, burn down cities? Or is it just literally saying, we're not going to take this. We're not going to do what they tell us to do. The fact is, my friends, treason, back in the framers' days, they established and set it in bedrock what treason is. And so you can't necessarily, you know, go and say, well, we're going to redefine this because we believe you have to be at war. Well, you can do that, but you can't wipe out the history in the context of how they defined treason. And all you're doing is you're just trying to confuse the matter. The reality is, and here's the real reality. Does the state have the authority to charge somebody with treason? I'm going to read it right here. Article 4, Section 4, Subsection 2. A person charged in any state with treason. Well, I guess a state can charge a person with treason. There you go. The Constitution grants the authority to states to charge them with treason. Now, this is all in context to public servants who are violating their oath of office. They're committing moral perjury. Now, the whole point of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was to make it easier to actually go after these public servants without having to charge them with treason, or actually without having to convict them of treason. you can still charge them with treason and charge them with moral perjury and violating their oath of office. You know, when a person goes in front of a court, 9 times out of 10, they've committed a crime, but they've actually said that, you know, you've not only committed murder, you've, you know, did this, you've done this, and you jaywalked. They try to throw every crime in the book that this person has committed. Well, the same thing, this is the exact same thing you have to do with your public servants that are violating the Constitution. And more specifically, when we're talking about our legislators that represent us in Congress and they're being directed to comply to the Constitution and get rid of unconstitutional powers, and they refuse to do that, how is that not treasonous? How is that not fulfilling their oath of office? Now, this is the dirty stuff that we have to do. This is the political force we have to use. But here's the thing, and I want you to understand this, that until we actually start holding the Constitution as the supreme law of the land and not all of these sub-laws and these sub-definitions that have no constitutional standing, then we're going to constantly, you know, be tossed to and fro by tyrannical leaders. And until we start understanding the spirit of 76 and the spirit of the revolt of Britain and tyranny, I want you to understand, those people, because there's lots of people that say, hey, just because you have a political dissent against the Constitution, against liberty, doesn't mean that you're a treasonous person. Absolutely it does. Because go look at the Tory Acts. When they actually, you know, finished the Revolutionary War, the Tory Acts put the shot across the bow in 1776. It was January 2nd. 1776 with the Tory Acts, they said, if you're going to be loyal to the British, then we're going to get rid of you. And that's exactly what they did. They said, you don't have a right to be here. You're an enemy to us. You're an enemy to the ideology of liberty. Well, what do you think communists are? What do you think these people in Congress that are actually violating the Constitution and demanding that we do things that are unconstitutional, such as even Biden? We've gone so far beyond the veil. We've gone so far that it is just, are you kidding me? My friends, we have the Constitution as the greatest weapon to ending tyranny. If you understand what the divine hand of providence has given us, the Constitution has to be our weapon, and we can't shrug at picking it up and using it. These people deserve to face, you know, the truth of justice, and I am all okay with providing mercy. I am absolutely okay with that. As a matter of fact, you've heard me say this before. When somebody, because everybody was doing it, nobody knew any better, and I actually went to these people and I said, can we really do this? This seems kind of wrong. And then they're told, yes, we can do this. We have all the authority, blah, blah, blah. Get back and vote the way you're supposed to vote. Then, okay, that those people deserve mercy. But those people willingly, without callous, without any reservations, have inflicted us with tyranny, they're gone. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.